This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live. HRRN
Live. But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You know, each and every week, I tell you this, I have the privilege to visit with so many of the people that make our sport a success. And of course, I'm talking about the trainers. And oftentimes when I host racing coverage around the country, I talk about major two-year-old stakes races. And I often refer to the fact that we could be looking at the stars of tomorrow in our sport. Well, the same could be said for tonight's edition of Trainer Talk as we focus on a pair of upcoming stars just getting started with their careers. It's a rookie trainer edition of Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton, and happy to have you with us. Want to welcome everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220, XM 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on our HRRN website, horseracingradio.net. I am, of course, Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios with my producer, Lee Delapina. And our first guest here tonight, really looking forward to visiting with him. It's William Van Meter. He goes by Wilby. We'll talk to him about that in just a moment. But in the first half of this program, I will hear his story. In the second half, it will be young Joe Sharp. We'll talk to him about his career just getting off the ground. But let's start with Wilby. Wilby, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
All right. Wilby, where did that come from?
Well, my real name's William Browning Van Meter, and I don't know the story exactly. I think it probably is the fact that both my parents were hippies at one point, and I don't think they knew what they were going to call me, Will, Bill, or whatever, and I believe one of my older brothers just who was also very young at the time, just called me Wilby one day, and it kind of stuck. But I'm happy to have it, and
well, listen, you're just getting started with this career of yours. I mentioned our rookie trainer edition here tonight. You've saddled just 13 starters to date, but you've won with two of those 13. You've also had a second and a third, so getting things off on the right foot.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of new, I'm very fortunate in that I have nice horses, and at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to, and that's how you win races. Again, I just can't tell you how fortunate I've been just to be training the quality of stock that I am for the quality of people that I am, and so that makes, you know, it makes my job look easier, and it makes it look like I know what I'm doing, because you know, good horses take to what we're trying to teach them naturally, and they're going to win races for you, you know, no matter how good or bad you are. So really it's just a function of the horses that I'm training, and you know, to be able to win races at Oaklawn Park and Delaware Park and hopefully Keeneland and Churchill this fall is really just a representation of the type of horse that I have in my barn.
Tell me a little bit about some of the people that have supported you with your decision to become a public trainer and get things going on your own.
Well, obviously my dad's been a huge support in more ways than one, not just with horses, but, you know, just giving me the courage to go out and do it. He sent me my first horse, a filly by the name of Country Woman, who was a horse that we kind of broke out on the farm and there was no trainer for. And I was like, well, I'd, you know, kind of love to get training. And so she was kind of my first horse. And then I got my second horse from a great guy named Brad Grady, who I'm sure Joe Sharp will say something about because he has horses for him as well. He's a young guy from Texas, real enthusiastic about the game. And I just kind of happened to meet him at a sale and we kind of hit it off, and he sent me my second horse And then I've got, let's see who else. I've got three for Arthur Hancock of Stone Farm, and it's obviously an honor to train for people of that caliber, and it's a huge compliment to what we're trying to do on a daily basis when people like that are willing to send you horses. Got a couple horses in partnerships, and then I own one myself. So we're pretty well split up, and we train for great people. Not only do they have nice horses, but I find you tend to make good decisions for good owners.
Well, you mentioned your dad a couple of times so far. That's Tom Van Meter, somewhat of a household name with folks in the thoroughbred industry. He's been involved in the game from a very young age, and he's somebody that worked in partnership with Riley McDonald at Eaton Sales. He's now out on his own raising and selling horses and does a phenomenal job. I've had the privilege of knowing your dad for a long time, pretty much since I moved to Kentucky back in the late 90s, and a real class act and somebody who's passionate about the game. I guess, Wilby, it's safe to say that you were raised around this sport, working with your dad. Is that true?
Yes, sir. First, just appreciate the compliment of my dad. Yes, he's a great guy, and not only is he well known, but he's very well liked, which helps you out. But yeah, I was raised around horses, and you know, as long as I've had a memory, there have been horses in it. It wasn't something that I knew that I had a passion for at a younger age, you know, kind of walking yearlings when you're a young kid and weed eating out on the farm and kind of doing all those things. I guess you take it a bit for granted in that you don't realize, I guess, the uniqueness of the situation that you're in. And I didn't, you know, although I was raised around horses, I didn't truly realize that right off the bat that, you know, from the get-go that they were going to be a passion of mine and, you know, on down the line how I was going to try to make a living.
Did you consider doing something else at some point in your life?
I wouldn't say I ever really considered doing something else, but, you know, maybe just didn't know quite what I was going to do and just, I guess it's all kind of unfolded organically in, you know, finding myself where I am today. You know, when I got out of high school, I went to the military for a couple of years, and when I got it done with that, I guess the spark was really when I got out of the military, I went and worked for Meg and Eric Buckley of Three Main Stud, and it was just kind of something that, you know, what do I do now? And these are some friends of mine, so I went and worked for them, and kind of that experience, you know, you're looking around and you see, okay, people are making a living out of, you know, having this great way of life and working with these wonderful animals. This seems like something that I should probably get involved in. And I guess that was kind of where, you know, I said, I want to work with horses one way or another, but didn't really quite know which direction I was going to go in.
So what led to the decision to ultimately decide to get involved on the training side?
Again, I was stationed up in Fort Drum, New York one summer, and my dad was up there for the sale, and he said, come over for the sale, and so I got a pass and went over there and ended up kind of meeting Wayne Lucas, and he shook my hand, and he was like, hey, young man, we like to hire kids that are in the military, you know, former military, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of, you know, once I got done with college, I didn't know really which way I was going to go. And that conversation had kind of planted a seed in the back of my mind, you know, what an honor it would be to go and work for a guy like Wayne Lucas or something. And so I got his number from my dad and just called him. And, you know, I said, I'm looking for a job. And he said, be down to Arkansas tomorrow. And that was my first day on the racetrack.
Wow, it was that easy to get that job with D-Wayne, huh?
Yeah, you know, I guess I'm very fortunate in, you know, the fact that, yeah, your parents, you know, the fact that people like my dad is going to open up a lot of doors for me, and I'm very acknowledging the fact that, you know, maybe I've had some opportunities that others wouldn't have right off the bat, but I wouldn't just listen. Anybody can go and work for Wayne Lucas, and he's going to hire you if you're the right person. If you're sitting outside his barn 4 o'clock every morning, you know, with the right attire and asking him every day for a job, you're going to get a job. So, but yeah, I mean, it was that easy, and it just overnight, I guess the rest of my life changed.
Talking with trainer William Van Meter here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. William, first of all, thank you for your service to our country. And I think it's interesting that Dwayne Lucas trained so many of your dad's top horses. Be Gentle is one that comes to mind. I think it's interesting that you really didn't get to know him or even meet him until you were in the military and then went to the sale up in New York with your dad.
Yeah, you know, I guess it kind of goes back to the fact that like I said, you know, when you're a kid growing up and you're in the game, I guess I don't want to say you don't take it for granted, but you don't really realize the importance of what it means to have a nice horse or go to the races and do those things. And, you know, another thing is I was a kid that was kind of rebelling against my parents, so I wasn't always around, you know, to take part of those things. But I was actually over in Korea when my dad had Be Gentle with Wayne Lucas, and he had a great year that year. He had another really nice filly named Victory USA. So I was over in Korea that year. But, yeah, I guess it was kind of funny that, you know, the first time we met was later on. But looking back on it, I think the majority of the horses that my dad had in training earlier on when I was around were with Elliot Walden. And then I think that relationship with Wayne Lucas kind of started perhaps maybe after Elliot stopped training and started working for Windstar.
Well, you have some history in your corner because Wayne Lucas and that trainer tree with his assistants that go out on their own and have great success, that list goes on and on and on. And just kind of curious about what it must be like working for a guy like Dwayne Lucas. Tell me about that experience.
You're right. The tree is amazing, and you're going to be speaking with Joe Sharp, and he's in turn as part of that tree, having come up under Mike Maker.
Yeah.
And the fact that I'm even, you know, a story is mainly due to the fact that I work for Wayne Lucas. Being a young trainer is nothing unique, but the fact that you came up under that guy, I guess, gives you a little more attention maybe than somebody else. But as far as working for Wayne Lucas, it's great. I mean, he's a class act. He's a wonderful coach. He's a great motivator. He makes your job so easy. I mean, you work very, very, very hard, but it's very easy in the fact that everything is approached with a lot of discipline, a lot of organization, trying to do the best with everything that you do. So it's kind of something that it was a place that I really fit in well with kind of how I guess I approach my life and I guess the discipline that I received from the Army and try to use every day. It was a great fit for me because it has a lot of that kind of military type edge, and it was a great when you get out of the military, you think, wow, I'm never going to be a part of a team like I was there, or have that camaraderie like you do in the military. But in fact, in these unique places like Wayne Lucas Training Stable, there is that camaraderie and there is that sense of teamwork and pride. You know, a guy that's been there with Wayne Lucas for over 12 years, Bass Nickel, who served in the English Army and fought over in the first Iraq War. I mean, he's been his main assistant, and really, you grow, you create almost a brotherhood there. And so you're learning how to, you know, you're learning your future craft, which is training horses, but you're also kind of developing friendships. You know, almost a second father figure in Wayne. So it means a lot professionally, it means a lot personally, and it's just a great place to go and work and like a shining example of quality in our game.
How long did you work with Wayne?
I think I was with him from 08 to 2011, a little over 3 years.
What was his reaction when you told him that you were thinking about going out on your own?
That's a good question. You know, he's a very supportive guy. It was very emotional, I think, for me, you know, to kind of have that conversation with him. You know, I don't recall specifically his exact emotions, but I know that he's always been supportive. You know, Wayne Lucas, his goal is to not make you his assistant. It's to make you a trainer. He doesn't want you to be a pawn in his chess game. He wants you to be the king of your own game. So I think that it's always something that with every guy that works for him, he is probably looking forward to having that conversation, I would suppose. But specifically, I don't recall, but I think for me, I remember the day that I left, it was really emotional, and I think I gave him a hug, and I was crying a little bit, but I don't recall exactly his, you know, what he said at that time, but since I've been out on my own, I mean, when I won my first race, he was there, and it meant a lot to me that, you know, he came and threw his arm over my shoulder and got in our win picture, and but yeah, he's definitely a mentor of mine and an idol and second father figure, and just don't have enough nice things to say about him.
What would you say is the best advice that you ever received from Wayne Lucas?
The best advice, you know, you get advice from him every day, and he's always looking to improve you. I think, you know, one of the lessons as a trainer would probably be, you know, I don't think he ever told me this specifically, but, you know, just watching him train, you know, the advice that he gives you is probably to be consistent. Just be consistent in everything that you do with your horses, with be consistent in what you ask them to do and how you ask them to do it. Be consistent with your help and how you discipline them and how you try to create a culture of perfection, I guess you'd say. Be consistent in how you show up to work, what time you show up to work, the attitude that you show up with. Be consistent in how you communicate with owners and how you treat owners, and just probably consistency is, you know, probably the one word to me that defines what I'm trying to do in my own training stable, but something that, you know, I guess you could say advice that I kind of took from him and watching him do what he does. So
how about the best advice you've received from your dad?
You know, I've received it's a tough question, because I've received a lot of great advice from both of them. You know, my dad's kind of a guy that's not afraid to do things his way, and, you know, whether it's start a farm or start a family or get his vet license or start a consignment or kind of maybe, well, I know that I haven't really answered your question in advice per se, but, you know, I guess just the example that he sets is don't be scared to go out on your own, put your name out on the line. You know, and another thing is he's in this kind of unique situation where a lot of agents and salespeople are, you know, integrity is a huge word for them. And he's a guy that has been able to sell a lot of horses and maintain his integrity. And so, you know, I try to look as an example as to, you know, sometimes you got to fess up that you made mistakes with people's horses, and you always got to maintain your integrity when training, because at the end of the day, if you have integrity with your horses are going to, you know, return that honesty to you. And so I guess maybe integrity and not having the fear to, you know, maybe be entrepreneurial and take out your trainer's license, I guess, would be kind of some of the advice or examples that I've taken from him. So that's what I know.
Talking with trainer William Van Meter on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. William, I thought it was funny, as I was doing a little homework here, getting ready for the show, I happened to notice your Twitter profile, and I think we follow each other on Twitter, and in your profile, I said, yeah, he's just like his dad. It says, in Kentucky, we train our horses and let our women run wild. I had to laugh.
Yeah, that's an old saying. I think I was in college, and that was hanging up my first go at college. That was hanging up on one of the frat walls there, and that was kind of always a saying that stuck in my head, and I think it's the truth.
Do you have other siblings that are involved in the horse business?
I've got a big family. I've got three brothers and a sister, and so far I've got two older brothers that are not involved. They're kind of both entrepreneurial guys. I've got a younger brother who's 19 and shows a little bit of interest in it, but as far as my son's kids, I'm the only one crazy enough to play this game. But I've got a first cousin named Will Mayer, who's kind of a rising star, I guess you could say, over at Keeneland, and he did the Darley Flying Star program, and it works for the sales staff over there. But other than him, it's kind of just him and me, really. You know, that's another thing. We've never been forced to, you know, horses have never been forced on to any of us, and we've all been kind of able to find our own way. And if we were to choose horses, I'm sure it'd be supportive. And if we weren't, then, you know, those things would be supported as well. And, but yeah, I'm the only one of this branch so far, anyway.
You know, you talked about Dwayne Lucas being with you when you won your first race and coming over, getting in the winner's circle with you. I know that meant an awful lot, but take me back to that day when you win that first race. It has to be just an amazing thrill, and in some ways, a bit of vindication for you, knowing that, hey, I can do this.
Oh, certainly. I mean, winning races is, I guess, at the end of the day, what we're all trying to do, and a great thrill. I mean, every day you train horses is a thrill and a challenge, whether you're running or losing or winning races. You're always, you know, every time you lead one over there, there's always those butterflies and that sense of excitement, and I hope that feeling never goes away, whether it's my first starter, first winner, or you know, hopefully if we're able to be successful, or, you know, 500th winner. But it was a great day. I mean, just to compete at Oak Lawn's in honor, I mean, it's one of the, to me, it's probably the best kept secret in horse racing. It's a great racetrack. People love horse racing down there, and it was an allowance race, so that meant a lot, and it was very competitive. And to see the horse draw off and win by five, and, you know, you got a lot of your friends there, and just kind of that same old saying that when those guys win those, hoist those derby trophies up, just out of body experience, I guess you'd say. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can imagine it had to be very special for you. What other things does William Van Meter like to do outside of horse racing when you can get away from the track for a little bit?
That's a great question. I love to do a lot of things, but you find that the majority, you know, I have a very close family. I like to, you know, spend time with my family, I guess you could say. And that's one of the great things about, you know, I started a horse over at Keeneland last week, and my entire family was there, you know, my brothers and their kids and my mom and my dad, and you know, so spending time with my family is something that I like to do. As far as hobbies are concerned, I mean, I really am obsessed with horses and horse racing, and I find not only the tension of working here, but also the release of getting away from it here in the same place. It's something that I just, you know, my whole life revolves around, and I find, you know, great joy in. Not only do I consider it work, but, you know, it's also a hobby and recreation for me. But spending time with my family is probably the thing that I'm, you know, miss the most being able to do as a trainer. But if you want to put your horses first, you have to you have to take time away from other things that maybe you enjoy or find find a lot of fun doing. And so I don't miss those things. And right now, you know, I know that my family understands that I'm trying to, you know, push something, and I gotta put a lot of work into it. But you know, I enjoy doing a lot of things, but, you know, don't get a chance to, I guess you could say, enjoy them.
Yeah, the sport doesn't leave you a lot of free time when you're training horses, that's for sure. How would you sum up your training philosophy?
I think I kind of spoke to this early, being consistent and fair.
Yep.
You know, always be fair to your horses. Understand that they're just like you and me. Although I come to work every day, there's some days that I wake up and I say, God, you know, I would love to not hear this alarm going off. so you can maybe relate to some of those feelings that your horses are having in trying to be fair to them. So I try to be fair to them. When they're communicating something's wrong, like I said, I've got great owners. You know, it's not a problem to call Arthur Hancock and say, nothing particularly wrong with your horse, but let's just give her 2 weeks off and get her kicked out on the grass. And he's completely okay with that and supports that decision. And then just being consistent, you know, being consistent in your feed program, being consistent in your routine, being consistent in what you want your horses to do and the manner in which you ask them to do it and how you're trying to get them to do it is a big thing for me. And, you know, not all horses, you know, like consistency or routine. You know, they may want you to change something up. So, you know, just be consistent in how you change those things with those horses. But, you know, really my thing is I want to take the best care of these horses that I possibly can. My main goal, we're not a win-at-all-cost barn. My main goal is not to win races. It's to provide the highest level of care that I can to some owner's horse. So they spend $500,000 at the sale and the horse can't run a jump, we're still going to be treating it like it's a champion from the second it steps foot in here to the second it goes home, whether he can run or not. And so that my goal is to provide that standard of care. And I'm hoping that, you know, that's kind of our sales pitch too. I'm hoping that there's owners out there that maybe this medication or doing this is going to help our horse run faster, but is that the manner in which we want to win races at the highest level? You know, we want to, you know, the main thing is that our horses are being well looked after, and at the end of the day, the horse is going to make the decisions about how we train it, when we train it, if it needs to not be trained. So that's kind of our philosophy, you know, just like a lot of other people, is putting the horse first. And like I said, don't, not a win at all costs, but try to lead over a horse over there that's happy and healthy. And, you know, if they need a race or two or whatever, don't worry about our percentage. Just, you know, just keep firing away with horses that have desire to do it.
Well, William, that philosophy has served you well in your very young career. I want to wish you all the best. Thank you for joining me on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. If people want to follow you on social media, they can do it at Van Meter William on Twitter. Appreciate it, buddy. Thanks so much. All the best.
Cool deal. Appreciate it. I actually tell Joe, I said hello. We actually worked some horses in company today. Asked him how our horses work.
Will do. Thanks, Wilby.
All right, thanks. Have a nice day.
We'll be Van Meter here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. Like all of our guests, receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those to him, and we're back with the second half. Joe Sharp coming up on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
The Basic Tipton November sale is the market leader. The 2013 November sale had the highest average of any mixed sale in the world, with 24 horses selling for $1 million and higher, more than any other breeding stock sale in the world. And the 2013 November sale provided an outstanding weanling market with a $500,000 foal and a $100,000 plus average, while also producing the highest priced horse sold in North America last year when Better, Better, Better went under the gavel at $5.2 million. The Basic Tipton November sale, Monday, November 3rd in Lexington, Kentucky, the market leader. Breathing easy is the key to equine performance and health. That's why horsemen around the world count on Flair nasal strips to protect the lungs of their equine athletes without drugs. Flair strips' gentle support of the nasal passages reduces the soft tissue collapse that occurs in all horses during intensive exercise. 7 clinical studies prove the benefits of Flair strips for reducing lung bleeding, reducing fatigue, and shortening recovery time. Reduce bleeding, recover faster, perform better. Prevent, protect, perform with Flair strips.
For racing coverage from the inside out.
I still kicked away and I thought I really had it until the 16th pole. Amazing little horse.
International English events.
A clear round and under the time limit will get you into the jump off.
And hard-fought Western competition.
Here we go, guys. Let's help him. You bet.
Woo! Tune in to HRTV, the network for horse sports. Online at hrtv.com.
The New York Thoroughbred Breeding and Development Fund means business for New York. Together with all equine pursuits in the Empire State, we pay more than $187 million in taxes and provide 33,000 jobs. We provide scholarships for young people who want to join the New York horse industry, and we encourage everyone to support all thoroughbreds all their lives. Visit nybreds.com to learn more about why the fund means business.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Penna, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
HRRN is your home for the 2014 Breeders' Cup Championships. We'll bring you over 17 hours of coverage during Breeders' Cup Week, leading up to our exclusive broadcasts of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, October 31st and November 1st, live from Santa Anita. Go to horseracingradio.net for a complete schedule of times, affiliates, SiriusXM info, or to listen live online. The Breeders' Cup World Championships, only on HRRN.
Want to know what we're up to?
Yeah.
Then log on to horseracingradio.net.
It appears that the website has become alive.
Horseracingradio.net is your official home for HRRN on the web. Read our blogs, download our podcasts, link up to our Twitter and Facebook pages, listen to live streaming of all of our broadcasts, and much more. HRRN is your home for racing's biggest events, and our home on the web is horseracingradio.net. That's horseracingradio.net.
HRRN has a new home on SiriusXM Radio. Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, the Brisnet.com call-in show, and the ExpressBet Weekend Stakes Preview Show can all be heard on their new channels, Sirius 220 and XM 206, and the Equine Forum, Saturdays 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern on Sirius 92 and XM 92, and always streaming live at horseracingradio.net. This is Trainer Talk on HRRN Live, presented by Fasig Tipton.
And welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Really enjoyable visit with William Van Meter in the first half of the program as we continue with this rookie trainer edition of Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And up in the second half, well, how about trainer Joe Sharp, the native of Martinsburg, West Virginia? He has saddled just 9 starters to date, but tough to do much better. 5 winners and 3 third-place finishers from those 9 starters. And Joe is with me now here on Trainer Talk by Fasig Tipton. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, happy to have you with me. And boy, you talk about being on the fast track to the Hall of Fame, or at least Rookie of the Year. You're on it, man.
Yeah, we've gotten off to a good start, and, you know, had some nice conditioned horses that, you know, were just able to get in some good spots, and the owners were all cooperative and where we placed them, and, you know, obviously had the racing luck and had a decent pilot on board, and we're pretty fortunate to have done as well as we have starting out.
Yeah, I think I misspoke. 3 of those horses finishing second, not third, so 8 of your 9 have been first or second. Just kind of curious, what went wrong with the other horse?
He didn't like the dirt. We tried it, and the experiment failed, but, you know, we'll try him back on the grass next time.
You know, everybody dreams of starting their career in this fashion, and I've talked to so many trainers on this program that have won with the first horse that they ever started, and they got thinking, hey, this is going to be easy. But you've won with 5 of your first 9. Could you ever imagine?
No, I mean, it's been every one, I've, you know, it's been kind of like a wow, I can't believe we're, it's still rolling this well. But I mean, having said that, you know, every one that we've entered has been in a pretty good spot. So, on paper, it looked like it was possible, but like you said, it was, you know, a little, too good to be true each time that it happened, but I'm not going to complain. So.
How does a kid that grows up in Martinsburg, West Virginia, get hooked on horse racing and ultimately become a horse trainer?
Well, actually, I was born in Martinsburg, but I kind of split myself between Charlestown and Lexington as a kid. My dad always trained horses at Charlestown, and my mom always worked on the track at Keeneland, so I was between the two places, and actually, you know, spent summers in West Virginia, and, you know, was having condition books mailed to my house from the time I was about 10. And
wow.
Just kind of, I was a kid that slept with a pair of blinkers instead of a blanket. So, you know, just everything. I was crazy about the business my whole life. I rode for a little while and, you know, so I've kind of dabbled in a little bit of everything, but ultimately knew that training was where I was going to head, and, taking a few jobs that, you know, worked for Mike Stidham for 5 years and then went on to work for Mike Maker for the last 3, and you know, obviously for my dad as a when I was a kid, and kind of took bits and pieces and, you know, tried to take the best from everybody and come up with a regiment that worked for us.
You know, so many times when trainers tell me that their dad or their mom was involved in the sport and they ultimately decided to get involved as well, they'll tell me that the reaction from their parents wasn't quite what you would expect. They almost tried to steer them away from it. How about your parents when you told them that, hey, this is all I want to do?
Well, you know, actually my dad's been super supportive and has probably always been my biggest fan, biggest supporter. And, you know, my mom would say in growing up would try and detour me from being in the business. But, you know, I think both of them were glad that I wasn't riding anymore, and obviously believed in my ability to train. So, you know, I'd say they both took it pretty well and, you know, been supportive in all aspects now that the time's actually come.
Did I read somewhere that your mom is still involved with Galloping Horses today?
Yeah, that's true. She's actually still with she lives with Brett Calhoun, and so they're – she works with him, and then my dad still trains up in Presque Isle and goes to Florida for the winter. So,
did you ever have any thoughts of doing anything other than being involved in horse racing?
No, absolutely not. No, that's all I ever wanted to do. And I, you know, when I was younger, I thought I was going to be a jockey, and I did for a short time, and I ate myself out of a job. And, you know, as life's progressed, it's, you know, become the next step to and been just as fulfilling, if not more fulfilling, than any career the jockey could ever been.
You know, a lot of successful trainers started off as riders. Some had successful careers, like, say, Wayne Catalano, Wesley Ward. Others really didn't have that successful riding career, but they've all told me that they think that it helps them when they're training horses because they have been on that side of the fence, so to speak. How about you?
I'd say, you know, the more you can do in the business, the better. I was a jobs agent for a summer, and, you know, I learned a little bit how the racing office works. And, you know, so I think the more well-rounded you can be before you decide to set your mind to something, the better. And I definitely think that benefited me to having ridden races and having an understanding for the horse. And I still get on most, you know, a good portion of my horses myself every day. And, you know, wouldn't trade that for anything. And I think that that helps a lot. But, you know, yeah, I would agree that the more you can do, the better. So.
Visiting with trainer Joe Sharp here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, you mentioned the name Mike Stidham. How did you get in touch with Mike and ultimately end up working with him?
Actually, I met Mike Stidham in Hot Springs, and I was right after I quit riding, and I was actually supposed to go out to Canterbury to ride for him, first call, and on the way out there, I was having trouble with my weight. They called and actually asked if I knew anybody that would take an assistant job, and I actually called back and said I'd be interested in the job because, you know, I'm having trouble with my weight and just don't see this career going anywhere. And he sent me horses a couple weeks later, and we had a really good summer. We're in the mid-20s, you know, win percentage-wise. And I went on to work for him for about 5 years and left that job to go to work for Mike Maker. And that was, you know, ultimately what pushed me to make the next step. What I learned with Maker ended up being the final steps, the final polishing, and I felt I needed to take the plunge.
Yeah, you learn from everybody that you have the chance to be around, and as you said, the more things you can do and the more people you can work with in the sport, the more you learn. What did you learn and take away from working with Mike Stidham and then working with Mike Maker?
Obviously, the list could go on and on. They're both good horsemen. I think that they're both very different kinds of trainers, but, you know, a lot of positive things that I pulled from both. And, you know, the way Maker ran his operation is very similar to how I've run mine so far, and, you know, we'll continue to. And, but, you know, pulled a lot from both and a lot from my childhood, from my dad. And, you know, just I've worked around horses from anywhere from, you know, $2,500 claimer was the first horse I ever owned at Charlestown. And, you know, worked with horses of one grade one. So, you know, I like every aspect of it. I love the claiming aspect of it. I love young horses. You know, pretty much anything that comes our way, you know, new challenges or we'll keep it exciting and keep getting up every day.
You know, William Van Meter joined me in the first half of the program, and he talked about working with Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas for quite some time. You, of course, worked with one of Wayne's former assistants in Mike Maker. He described Wayne's operation as being very disciplined. It was that type of approach to running his business and his operation, but also a camaraderie of feeling like you were part of a team. Was Mike Maker kind of the same way?
You know, Mike's barn was a great barn to work in. Coming from Stidham's barn, who was a little more, I guess, a little more uptight, maybe run. Maker doesn't say a whole lot. He puts a lot of trust in the assistants that he's appointed at the levels that he appoints them at. And our relationship was, you know, full of a lot of respect. We didn't know each other when I started the job at all. But, you know, grew to be real close friends and, you know, have a great working relationship. I would say that there was a lot. It's obviously a very clean, tight-run operation, but not a hostile environment by any means and not a nervous environment, just very much, really good camaraderie and just seems to flow. And, it was very successful for that reason. And Mike Maker, you know, treats people well and it shows in his results.
You know, you mentioned when you were with Mike, working with claiming horses, working with grade one winners, it kind of spanned the gamut. You had so many top horses come through that barn. If you had to pick one or two of your most memorable moments when you were working with Mike, what would they be?
Vickers in Trouble. Obviously, I had that horse the majority of the time. Had him. I actually worked him myself to get his gate card at Keeneland last fall, and then had him in Louisiana all winter. And he was definitely, you know, the most memorable, winning the Louisiana Derby with my wife riding him, and going to the Kentucky Derby with him. That was, something like I'd never experienced before. And so Vicar definitely would have to be my hands down most memorable experience. And aside from that, there was a lot of good ones. King David was another fun one who we claimed for 35 and won a grade one with the very next start. So that was another one that was, a horse that it was a lot of fun and that I was around a lot and pretty close to. So
what finally led you to make the decision to go out on your own?
Well, I had five horses for clients that were my clients basically while I was with Mike at the end. And I came back to put my daughter in school here in Louisville while we were still at Saratoga. I flew back for a couple of the dark days, and Mike and I were just sitting in the office kind of going over some stuff and talking about stalls in the fall. And, I didn't want my horses to kind of be a burden. And I spoke with him and I said, "Do you think I should put in a stall up of my own?" And he said, "You can if you want." And he said, "You got a nice group of horses and you have more support behind you than a lot of people starting out." And he said, "I think you should go for it." And, called me later in the day and said, "Don't feel weird about leaving, I'm behind you." And that's from there, we kind of started rapidly getting busier and busier, and left Saratoga. My last day was, he asked me to get him to the Saratoga meet, so I flew back up there, was finished out the meet well up there, and started on my own September 2nd here at Trackside in Louisville.
Tell me about some of the people that have helped you get started in this decision to go on your own as a public trainer.
Well, I flew on one of my trips down here. I met with Mr. Ramsey, and
he's a good
met
one.
Out at the farm.
He's a good one to have in your corner.
Yeah, no, he never hurts. And Mr. Ramsey and I have always, I had a lot of his horses while I was with Mike, and his grandson Nolan worked with us while I was with Mike for the summers. And I met with him, and he said I had a tour of the farm for a couple hours with his son, farm manager Mark Partridge. And when I met Mr. Ramsey up at his house, he sat down and said, "How many would you like to get started?" And, kind of with a smile on his face, but he, told me he'd send me 10, and he gave me 2 right away, and then we claimed the rest. And that way he didn't have to take anybody from any horses from any of the trainers that had them already. And, we're just starting to get some of those back. I've run, I think, 2 for Ramsey, or 3 for Ramsey, and had 2 winners since we started together, so that's been good. And also Brad Grady is another guy out of Texas that claimed a couple 4 and is we're going to continue to claim 4, and he's another younger kind of ambitious owner that gave me some security and his interest in the game. And then Chris McLaughlin's also been a partner of mine, and there's a bunch of guys, Empire Capital, but everybody's been very supportive. Even a guy from Minnesota, Dan Cherswick, that I used to ride for. I'll never forget, I fell off one of his horses in the post parade when I was riding races, and he actually was the first owner that ever came to me and asked for his jock's mount back before he got scratched. And then we've been good friends, and he's been an owner ever since. So, there's been a lot of people, but the owners that I have all been great so far, and looking forward to having horses and long-term relationships with all of them. So,
talking with trainer Joe Sharp on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Joe, let's go to that day, your very first winner, September 10th. It wasn't all that long ago. It was at Kentucky Downs, a horse by the name of Holiday Drama, who you both owned or do own and trained. You had the opportunity to give a leg up to your wife. And if people aren't familiar with this, back in October of 2011, you did marry jockey Rosie Napravnik. How special was it to be able to share that moment together?
Well, that was great. I mean, that was the perfect scenario. Couldn't ask for any better. Owner couldn't tell me not to run the horse there, so that helped. And, we entered it pretty aggressively, and, Rosie got the job done. But, no, it made it extra special to be able to do it together. And, I'm hopefully actually Rosie ended up riding all the winners that I've saddled so far, and it's made it a lot of fun. I mean, she was one of my biggest supporters in making the move, and, had a lot of faith in me from the beginning, obviously. But, it makes it extra special. The more people you can share it with, the better. And,
Well, if Rosie's anything like my wife, she's obviously not a big fan of being told what to do. Did you give her any pre-race instructions, or do you just tell her, hey, honey, you're the best, go do it?
Well, over the years, we've found what works as far as that goes. So she's ridden a lot for Mike Maker and for Stidham when we were together. And, so pretty much we've learned how to handle each other as professionals. And, I pretty much wish her good luck and send her on her way.
What did she say when she came back at Kentucky Downs aboard Holiday Drama? She came back to meet you, lead her into the winner's circle. What was that conversation like?
She said, good job, boss. And I shook her hand, and that was about it. it was pretty ordinary scenario, but definitely had a little bigger smile on my face than normal, I'd imagine.
Did you go out and celebrate that night?
I hauled the horse down there myself, so I had to haul it back, and so celebrating, I guess, would have consisted of a Wendy's drive-through, then yeah.
Hey, well, look, we're all human, and as good as Rosie is, what if the scenario comes up and she gets one of the horses in trouble? It's a bit of a bad ride. Have you thought about your strategy for bringing that up and handling that scenario yet?
Well, it used to make for a long dinner when it was, it's not like it hasn't happened before to where one of us wasn't happy with the other, whether it be the way I reacted to a ride or the way that I thought, I felt about one. But anyway, like I said, we've learned to deal with what works there and try not to take it home. And, like you said, we're all human. So I'm going to have a horse that's not ready enough, in her opinion, maybe, or entered in the wrong spot. And she'll get into some traffic trouble. But one thing about Rosie is she's always, her head's always in the right place, and she's always trying to do the right thing and gives you 110% every time. So as professionals, that's all we can ask for,
How often do you get introduced as Rosie's husband?
Plenty. Yeah. As time's gone on, but I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. I'm very proud of her. One of her biggest fans. We're probably her biggest fan. So, everything we've done, we've built together, of recent years, and have both gone to places that our careers weren't even close to. So when we met, we've made a lot of good decisions together, and, hopefully we'll continue to climb in an upward direction.
Yeah, well, the other thing outside of horse racing that you both enjoy and are involved with is you both serve as foster parents to several dogs, right?
Yeah, we do foster for the SPCA. We do.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that. How many dogs do you have right now?
Well, we have three dogs that are permanent dogs, and actually we only do the fostering when we're in Louisiana. So last year we had four different foster dogs at different times, and we were able to place them all and get them in homes, and we enjoy doing it because our house up down there is set up nice at the backyard that's fenced in, and we're exposed, know a lot of people, and usually have a lot of success with placing them, and we like animals, obviously, and it's our way of kind of doing what we can, doing our good deeds that kind of that we enjoy doing, so.
How do you balance your professional and your personal lives when you're both going so many different directions?
Well, fortunately, we've actually been able to be on the same schedule, as far as same circuits, pretty much. And, that's been extremely helpful. We've been very lucky, with the exception of me being in New York while she was at Churchill. And so that was only about 6 weeks, but, day to day, we're pretty much in the same circuit, and we've tried to make sure that that happened. And, you know, aside from the weekend here, weekend there, which anybody would know is refreshing, if nothing else, you know, we've been lucky enough to spend a lot of time together, and which is hard to do in this business.
Rosie Napravnik's husband, Joe Sharp, joining me on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Sorry, man, I just had to do it. how many horses do you have in the barn right now?
I have 17, actually.
Is that an ideal number, or would you like to have more?
There's no ceiling. I mean, I'll, you know, we're continuing to actively claim and get new horses in, and, you know, no, we're looking to continue to grow. I mean, 17's a nice number, and, you know, it's happened rather quickly, but I was able to bring over a good foreman that worked with Maker with me, and so he's been great. And, you know, no, we're definitely excited about our growth, and looking forward to the move to New Orleans in the winter.
Speaking of claiming horses, Holiday Drama, your first winner, was a horse you claimed last April at Keeneland. That horse turned out okay so far and still going strong. Tell me about the Joe Sharp philosophy and approach to claiming horses and what you're looking for to find the right one.
You know, there's no real philosophy or approach. I would say that I do like horses with conditions, obviously. And other than that, I mean, each case is individual and unique, and each owner that you're claiming for are different a lot of times in what they like. But, you know, basically the biggest thing that I feel with claiming horses is, you know, knowing what the next step is, what you're going to do with them, or where you're looking to go, or what you're looking to change to feel that you can make them a little faster, or, you know, make them work in your program or where you go. So, I think just the outlook on the next step or the future with them is, you know, just basically how I sift through the ones that we look at.
Joe, a lot of times we'll hear that athletes will have different goals that they'll set for different points of their career, different things they want to accomplish. How about trainers? Do trainers spend much time setting goals?
What was that?
How about trainers? Do trainers spend much time setting goals, much like athletes do with their career?
You know, I have set personal goals of just, you know, winning races week to week, day to day, and you're only as good as you are the very next day. You win in this business, and they want you to go back out and do it again tomorrow. And, you know, so that's – my goals are very short-term, and I think by the more short-term goals you can complete, the longer-term goals will fall into place. So,
Joe, only about a minute left. It's been great to hear your story. Tell me something and tell our listeners something that they might not know about Joe Sharp.
Might not know about me. Well, I'm head coach of my daughter's soccer team. And Rosie and I won the Chalky Karaoke competition in Saratoga this year.
Yeah, but let's face it, that was all her. She was popping it like it's hot, right?
So I guess a couple people do know about that. But
there's video somewhere.
You know, we enjoy I enjoy trail riding. And
so, Joe, you mentioned coaching your daughter's soccer team. What's more difficult, coaching the girls in soccer or training racehorses?
Definitely the kids in soccer are pretty tough. The parents are pretty good to deal with, fortunately. But you know, you get all kinds of different backgrounds, and you know, even in the horse business, your human resources are the toughest part of training horse, in my opinion. So, people are harder to train than horses.
Joe Sharp here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasic Tipton. Joe, an absolute delight to hear your story. Keep up all the great work, continued success, and I'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, and Joe Sharp, like all of our guests who appear on the program, will receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. We'll get those to him right away. Really fun show. William Van Meter in the first half of the program, Joe Sharp here in the second half. If you missed any portion, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available on the site and on iTunes. You can listen at your leisure anywhere you may be. Every Thursday night, catch us on the Brisnet.com call-in show right here from 6 to 7 Eastern. And on Fridays, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. And follow us down the road to the Breeders' Cup. It's all at horseracingradio.net. My thanks to William Van Meter, Joe Sharp, for my producer, Lee Delapina. I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.